we're shoveling. This is the growing season right here on News Talk, Saga 960 AM. This show is brought to you by Yerba Mate. What the heck is Yerba Mate? You're going to find out in a little bit.
So it's not my mate?
No. No, it's not. Your mate is not.
Your mate, Kelly? No?
No. Your mate is not named Yerba, or you're not named Yerba, and this is your mate.
Anyway. My mate is Lynn.
Anyway, look, if you're looking for something super caffeinated, Yerba Mate might be your thing.
This will kick your ass.
Yeah, this show is called Let's Do Breakfast. We thought it would be cool to look at all of your breakfast elements from a horticultural perspective. Coffee comes from a plant. Tea comes from a plant. Cereal, toast, all these things comes from plant materials. So it seemed fitting to us, right, Pops?
100%.
By the way, I didn't introduce myself. I'm Matt, the producer, a.k.a. Matt McFarlane. Pleased to be joined by the man that you just heard speak, Jack McFarlane. Dad, do you do breakfast?
Actually, I'm really bad, Matthew. I do not do
you
breakfast. Do not,
you know what? I didn't do breakfast for years and years and years. Breakfast consisted of a cup of coffee, and that was it, and didn't eat until lunch. Not good for you.
Absolutely. No, it's not good for
no,
you at all.
No, it is the most important meal of the day. But I can't wait to dive into some of these details because coffee, I'm fascinated by coffee. I love this, being that I am the co-host of Drinks on Us right here on News Talk, Saga 960 AM, Sunday mornings, 10 AM, that I want to talk about this as well as get into some of the other stuff. I love cereal. I'm a huge cereal fan, and I want to know about the horticultural end of this. Cool?
Okay.
All right, all that and much more. Lock it in. Get those, top those cups of coffee up. Top those cups of tea up. Butter that bagel. This is the growing season right here on News Talk, Saga 960 AM, and we're doing some breakfast. Ah, yes, that sound that you're hearing. That's actually a sound bite. That's not anybody urinating.
But that's not consternation?
What's consternation?
I have no idea. This coffee you gave me this morning, Matthew, kind of wired me out.
I got to go look at what consternation is. I don't want to be consternating if I shouldn't be. This is the growing season right here on News Talk, Saga 960 AM, back off commercial break, in this case a pee break. We thought that it would be great to drop a little sound bite in there, mostly because we're going to be talking about fluids. Not necessarily urine, but things that will create urine eventually. I always heard a little adage. I forget who said it to me. I think it was a family friend. You never buy coffee, you only rent it. Why?
Because you have to pee so quickly after you drink it.
Because you got to give it back.
It does not dehydrate you.
Okay, hold on. Whoa, jumping up and down already here. Here's the point, is that when you drink a cup of coffee or a cup of tea or orange juice or whatever you're drinking in the morning for breakfast, generally that is the precursor to having to pee at some point, and in some cases, other stuff too. There is a rumor out there.
You may have to poo.
Yes, there is a rumor out there that coffee does, in fact, make you have to go to the bathroom, have to go number two. And I don't really subscribe to that thought process because it doesn't really do that to me, but I feel like there is some science behind that. In fact, on Drinks on Us, on News Talk, Saga 960 AM, we've covered some of these topics before, and there is some science, some factual evidence behind the fact that coffee and tea do make you have to go to the bathroom, and not the standing up if you're a male, but the sitting down side of the bathroom.
And again, they always tell you to take this with a grain of salt.
Yeah. All right, Dad, are we starting off with tea first or coffee first?
Well, let's work it this way, Matthew. A person walks down in the morning.
Yep.
They've had a pretty tough night, sleepless, kids kept them up, that kind of thing. The day before, work was a bit of a pain in the ass, and they're tired.
Yes.
So they decide, what am I going to have this morning? Tea, coffee, or of course, everybody's favorite, Yerba Mate.
Okay. I can't even. All right. So
wait a minute. Okay. So as horticulturalists, we would come down and we would not say tea, coffee, or Yerba Mate. We would say, blanket alert going up here, Matthew, right, on the Latin.
Okay.
We would say Camellia sinensis the tea. We would say Caffea, what may I think here, Arabica, Robusta, or Cannaflora. Or we would say for Yerba Mate, everybody's favorite, Elix paraguaya. I believe that's the proper name.
Okay.
So that's a little bit on the heavy side.
Yeah. Let's not say any of those words again.
No, I don't think so. Anyways, Matthew. Yeah,
the Latin alert's going to be shut off.
Where does Yerba Mate come from?
Okay, whoa. Let's leave that little nugget right to the end. Because
I love Urban Mate.
I know. I know. Okay. Look, as I...
I can just see all these stores opening up. They're selling Urban Mate.
Right. As I scratch my eye because of the headache that I'm getting behind my eyeball here. All right, look. Upon the research for this show, we happened upon something that has now become the
catchphrase.
The catchphrase in the entire McFarland household, okay? There's a drink predominant in South America.
Uruguay, Paraguay, and right. I think Argentina, Matthew.
Called Yerba Mate. We're going to get to it. We're not getting to it right now because this is like premature ejaculation, okay? I haven't even gotten my pants off, and we don't even need to get my pants off anymore, okay? Let's leave it till the end because there's just some stuff associated with this. And my dad cannot stop talking about this drink. In fact, on Drinks on Us, Michelle, if you're listening, we got to get some Yerba Mate happening here because I am fascinated by this thing. Okay? Let's get into some more of the North American side of stuff and then we'll work our way into South America, shall we? So let me ask the stinking question again before you just spray and paint all over the studio here. Coffee or freaking tea? Pick one.
All right. Let's pick...
And if it starts with Yerba and ends in mate, we're not doing it yet. Which one are you doing?
I don't know. Let's try tea, but let's not hit it too heavy because if people have been listening to Drinks on Us, we did a whole segment on tea.
Yeah, we really went into the specifics of tea pretty heavy on Drinks on Us. But if we're doing breakfast, if this is a breakfast chat, we're best to hit a little bit of the tea stuff. Okay, so Dad, tea is an evergreen plant, right? Native to not here in Canada, but native to places like China and Japan.
And places also like South America and even Africa and Asia, Matthew.
Right. And it's a leaf. It's a leafy plant. And the leaves are removed from the plant. And in some cases, like in oolong or black tea, those leaves are dried and processed.
It's called withering.
There you go.
And they also do something like, they want to prevent this from happening, oxidation. So you got to be careful. It's the amount of oxidation or the processing of a tea. So you would originally start off with the white teas and then you get into your greens and then you would get into your blacks or oolongs.
But the whites and the greens are processed by far and away less. There's less withering. And as we learned on Drinks on Us, actually you co-hosted with me one Sunday morning over the holiday season.
Christmas, right?
Yeah, just before Christmas. And what happened is we tried green tea. Neither of us had ever tried green tea before. And green tea is, if you were to equate it to coffee, let's say medium roast, right? Green tea would be very, very light, but not nearly as light as the white tea. The white tea is wicked light as far as taste, right?
Well, yes. And it also has these white hairs, which I don't know if you want to really go that direction. But it's the earliest buds or leaves that are formed that they take off. It's the first ones that would form. They take those off because they're basically immature leaves.
Already. Right. Yes.
And that's where you get your white teas.
Your white
and then
tea.
Each stage gets a different tea. And so there's like 1,000 different kinds of you know, hand blends, I believe. And there's about 600 herbals or herbals, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. So the tea industry is a huge industry, massive
Monstrous.
Industry, but the transportation of this, of these leaves, can be a tricky one because the number one problem with tea and as far as the number one reason that tea is ruined during transport is moisture.
Moisture and also transference of other odors. So they have to be very careful and it's when the actual material, like the tea and so forth, is being transported, you have to be careful that there's not this other odors getting into there. But yeah, moisture, if it gets any moisture and mold forms, the tea is all wasted and it's a throwaway thing. Complete garbage, Matthew.
So that's it. So no moisture during transport.
No, not moisture at all. And also the way you store it at home is important.
I was going to ask, because with tea being such a predominant drink in the UK where they have a moist climate, they must be getting a lot of throwaway tea here because you would think that with the climate being moist, with there being a lot of moisture in the air, with it being more of a, not necessarily humid as far as heat, but just humid as far as moisture, they'd have to be storing this tea in a bit of a different fashion because, or in a very specific fashion, because otherwise it would just be getting moldy and nobody wants to have, you know, this is a cup of tea with a side of penicillin in the morning. Am I correct, Dad?
Sure. And it has, I don't know, you keep having this argument about which one has more caffeine and so forth. But I think they're about the same.
Yeah.
So here's the thing for you, Matthew. Which is drank more through the day and in the morning? Which is it, tea or coffee?
You know. Okay, I'm going to go with coffee.
Actually, it's the same. 50-50.
It's 50-50.
They figure about 2 billion cups each way. So 2 billion cups of tea and 2 billion cups of coffee. So it's about the same.
A day.
A day.
On Earth.
On Earth.
So there's 4 billion cups of fluid in the morning.
Before they start off to go to work or whatever.
Wow.
So anyways, Matthew, maybe we should get into health benefits. Do you have any idea what...
Of tea.
Of tea.
Okay.
Any idea?
A little bit. Yeah, I would say, okay, first of all, it's great for alertness, helps you perform better, I would say mentally, maybe even physically, because the presence of caffeine would be boosting your heart rate. You're a lot more sharp, correct?
Sure. And if you're going off to work and so forth, it's rich in polyphenols. And
what the hell's a poly? Wait, whoa. What do they do?
They reduce inflammation and fight cancer.
Oh, that's a good thing.
So that's good. They also have catechins. And you know what catechins do, Matthew?
They are the smaller kittens, smaller cats, catechins. No.
No. Where did that come from, Matthew?
That's whatever.
They reduce the formation of free radicals.
Here we
again.
Go.
Again.
Yeah, so cancer fighters, all that type of stuff.
Sure, and cell damage and aging. And by the way, I'm getting up there, so I need some help with my free radicals.
Yes. Yeah. And again, we've talked about how maybe you should just keep your radicals imprisoned, right? Nobody wants the radicals free and roaming around.
And again, if you're going off to work, you want to make sure that your brain's working better, and tea makes it's an excellent stimulant, so it keeps you awake and it makes you look good.
Absolutely.
So anyways, Matthew, one other thing. Can you give me one more thing that would help a person going off to work? Which one would you choose?
Oh, probably coffee.
No. Stay with the tea.
Okay.
One more thing that would help you as far as what tea is doing for you. What would it help?
Strengthens teeth.
Very good. Why?
It's the presence of, there's something else, there's some chemical in there that is good for dental health.
Sure. And what it does is it prevents the formation of plaque.
The tea does.
Yes. And nobody wants halitosis or horse breath in the morning.
Yes.
Bad and breath. So, you know, you wake up in the morning and you got a breath that smells like a dead cow. And so you want to make sure that when you're off and running to work,
yep,
your breath smells fresh, even with all the toothpaste or mouthwash.
All right.
So it's amazing for that. So that's one of some of the health benefits. If you want any more of the health benefits, go to the show. When was it, Matt? Drinks
on Us? I'll post the link for the Drinks on Us show about tea. I'll post it in Show Bits. GrowingSeasonCanada.com. There'll be a blog that will accompany this show. It's our visual accompaniment that allows you to follow along with the show. In fact, after the show airs, I will embed the show right into the blog, but I will post the link for our little tea chat. Much of the information that you've heard here gets expanded on that show. Dad?
So I don't know if we still have time on tea, but who are some of the top tea drinkers out there, countries?
Asia.
Actually, not so much. Turkey. Ireland. You said the UK, you were right on that. And then again, Canada is like number 20.
Huh.
So we're not, you know, we drink tea, but we're not as big a tea drinkers
now,
as, say, these other
when
places.
When you say Ireland, like, is there something, is the UK on there? Or is it just...
Number three. It's number three.
Okay.
And they drink something like 4.281, I'm trying to think here, pounds per person per year.
Oh.
So they drink a lot of tea.
Yeah. Well, is it dinner? No, lunch is called tea, isn't it?
I don't know, Matthew.
I think lunch is called tea. I'll do some research on it, but I thought lunch was called tea. All right, the big one, my favorite. I am a coffee snot. I have the grinder at home. I buy my beans whole. I have used algebra, I'm not kidding, to figure out the ratio of water to grinds. In fact, much of the genesis of the show Drinks on Us, again, I'm the co-host of that on News Talk Saga 960 AM, Sunday mornings 10 AM. Much of the genesis of that was the fact that both myself and my co-host Michelle Haken are coffee snobs. In fact, she's a coffee master. I call her a coffee mistress. The amount of coffee knowledge that Michelle has is absolutely astounding to me. We've talked about many of the subjects that we're going to touch on the Drinks on Us. We're going to touch on them here today on the growing season. Coffee to me is a fascinating plant in that this is the crux of a few countries' economy. Literally, there are some countries whose economy...
Like Brazil.
Brazil would be one of them. Costa Rica is another one. Their entire economy is based around the production and export of coffee.
Yes, it's amazing.
It's incredible.
And you know what, Matthew? Brazil's been the number one producer of coffee for the better part of 150 years.
See, I didn't know that. Okay, I didn't know that.
Your dad's pretty smart.
No. Well, yeah, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. But the... So coffee effectively, horticulturally, breaks down into two main plants. Arabica.
And Robusta.
And Robusta.
Or Cannephora.
Okay. All right.
You didn't know that.
No. Okay. But these two plants, the Arabica produces the superior tasting coffee.
Okay. Here's a question for you, Matthew.
Go for it.
How much Arabica over Robusta are produced? Which one is the number one coffee bean that is produced?
That I don't know.
75% are Arabica.
Okay. Which
makes sense.
Yeah, I was afraid to answer that question because I'm thinking if I answer this thing, I'm thinking that it should be Arabica, but it's probably Robusta. The Arabica beans are the majority of the beans that you're getting at high-end, higher-end coffee shops. So
I would agree.
Starbucks, Tim Hortons, McDonald's. When you see 100% Arabica beans, what that means is that you are getting the highest quality bean produced by a coffee plant producing fruit. And effectively what you're doing when you're drinking this coffee, you're literally drinking the seed of a coffee cherry. And these Arabica and Robusta plants produce cherries. It's a fruit. You're literally drinking the pit, the seed.
Okay. So you know anything about the history of these things, Matthew?
Of which things? Which plants or just in general?
Of the coffee plant in particular.
Not much. Go.
So they came out of the Ethiopian plateau. So Matthew, there was this guy named Kaldi or something. He noticed that his goats were eating these coffee beans or berries. And on top of that, the goats became really wired and energetic and they were bouncing all over the place.
Many thanks to the goats.
Thank you, goats. And he found out that the goats did not want to sleep at night. And so he decided, hey, this is kind of interesting. Why don't we try doing something with these? And then I don't know what the exact year was. I think it was in the 11th century or so. They got exported from Ethiopia to Yemen and then by Somali merchants.
So a lot of this is based, this is Africa at first.
Sure.
So you're talking the birthplace of coffee would be Africa.
Yes, right. I would say so.
Okay.
And then it reached the New World in the 18th century, and it became popular around the Boston Tea Party, 1773. Why, Matthew?
Well, I guess with a tea shortage, right? If you have a tea shortage, what's the alternative?
Well, that was part of it, and they also felt that the people felt it was a patriotic. Woo, that's a
patriotic.
Card. Thank you.
No problem.
Duty against King George III. They wanted to revolt. So they decided that they would drink coffee instead of tea.
Really?
Yeah, that was as simple as that.
So this was a political thing.
It was totally political.
All right, so we got a little bit of the coffee history here. How about the health benefits of this thing? Now, I would imagine they're probably pretty similar to tea, correct?
They're almost identical.
Right.
And I think earlier in this discussion, we mentioned that it didn't dehydrate you.
Yeah.
But it also stimulates the burning of brown fat, which generates a healthy heart.
Okay.
It also protects against things like Parkinson's disease and controls your appetite. Also, it has something to do with type 2 diabetes. And again, in the end, take this with
a grain of salt.
Thank you very much.
Now, and of course, not that I have ever worked for the Canadian Heart and Stroke Foundation and any of these medical bodies, but they're going to say, they're going to emphasize everything in moderation. Right?
Sure,
22 cups of coffee a day is not good.
So how many do you have normally?
Honestly, and I'm not even doing an after school special about this, one. I have one.
Well, I had a friend that used to drink 20 cups.
That's crazy.
But they recommend 3 to 4 cups a day, and that's about all they would think you should have.
Yeah, yeah. And the reason why I don't drink more than one is I have my cup of coffee in the morning. I am highly sensitive to caffeine.
Okay.
So if I drink a cup of coffee beyond about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm
completely
crazy.
Wired.
Yeah, and can't sleep.
Okay, so what are some of the negative effects of drinking coffee, Matthew?
Well, affects sleep. We just mentioned it.
Sure.
Right? You had a friend. You had a friend, Remke Tepper, who talked about how because he was from Holland, he was Dutch. He talked about how they would just toss a coffee pot on at 10 p.m. Man, I could not do that. Bro, I would be doing cartwheels in the freaking living room.
Sure, and we had these friends that were called the Voods, you know the Voods.
Yep.
And they would, I don't know, was it a Bunt or a Burns or what
bunt.
Is it?
No, bun. A bun.
A bun.
Bun
Thank
coffee
you.
Machine.
And they would put on like 2 pots at a time and they would have.
Yeah, but they also had 700 kids.
Well, they seem to be drinking in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 cups a day.
Dude, were they just shaking, standing still?
I have no idea, but that's a lot of coffee to be drinking.
The reason why I emphasize this is I have a funny feeling that in the Dutch culture, the coffee's a center point. It feels like they specifically that culture, because we have many Dutch friends, and the coffee pot's always on at night, constantly at night.
Here's a good question for you, Matthew.
Go.
How many coffee pots are sold every year in the world?
I would guess a lot.
Any idea at all?
I don't know.
58 million.
What?
58 million.
58 million a year.
58 million a year.
Like electronic devices to make coffee.
You got it.
Oh my God. Okay.
Now here's the thing, Matthew. How much coffee is sold daily across the world?
Should we break this down by?
Let's go say. Who do you think is the number one that produces coffee?
It's got to be McDonald's, and the reason is the presence of or the number of McDonald's stores, restaurants, vastly outweighs any of the other ones.
Sure. They do about 500 million cups of coffee a day.
A day?
A day. And then
hold on. A day.
You've got it.
In 2 days, they would sell 1 billion cups of coffee.
Yes. Yes. There's a lot of those restaurants or fast food joints out there. So they produce a lot of coffee.
That's a lot of coffee.
That's a lot of coffee.
That's 3.5 billion cups of coffee a week.
Okay, I guess the math is right. Yeah, sure. And then you've got like Starbucks. There's okay. Another one. Starbucks does about 4 billion cups of coffee a year, which is far short of McDonald's.
Big time.
And then you've got Tim Hortons, which does in the neighborhood of about 2 billion cups. So here's a really interesting stat, Matthew. 83% of all the adults in the U.S. drink coffee. And that represents over 500 million cups of coffee a day.
Holy crap.
That's a lot of stinking coffee.
Is that bad?
I don't know if it's bad.
I feel like that's a lot.
Are they stressed out or something? Or are they wired? God. I have no idea. But isn't that an amazing number? I think it's 583 million cups or something.
The fact that McDonald's to me would be the...
Like what's their coffee like?
It's good. It's good. Listen, man, it's better than Tim Hortons.
Really? I've never tried it.
I mean, for me... Starbucks is the brand of beans that I buy. I really enjoy Starbucks coffee. I've always liked the taste. Starbucks coffee is very, very roasted. It's not by any means a light roast. Even their lightest roast is not a light roast. It's very intense.
Like what was that you made me for
today? Starbucks. That's Starbucks.
It's still very strong, Matthew.
It's very strong coffee. Now, it was the Christmas blend that I made you. And it was it's from Indonesia. It's a Sumatran blend, okay? So it's very, very dark roasted. And it's a very earthy cup of coffee. So it's going to have not a lot of brightness. Generally what happens is in the Ethiopian and African blends, it tends to be brighter. There's a lot more tannin. It's a lot more... lip smack. It's a brighter tasting, more citrusy. And
know lots about coffee.
I love coffee. And then as you get into the Indonesia area in the Sumatra Islands, the it becomes a bit more of an earthy. It's very, very similar to tobacco. I also enjoy Cuban cigars. A cigar out of Cuba is a very earthy tasting cigar versus a cigar out of Nicaragua or the Dominican is a bit of a brighter tasting, a lot more of a treble on there. Okay. The cherry on the sundae here, or the leaf in the cappuccino by the barista.
Or the holly in your tea.
Okay. This yerba mate thing, listen, we're going through the research for this show, and Dad stumbles upon this thing called yerba mate, and that's all he's been talking about now for weeks. Dad, give us the brief history, and you don't have much time, but give us the brief history on this yerba mate thing.
Well, it's part of the holly family, and so what they do is they remove the leaves, and they have to be careful when they actually... They can't use boiling water. They just have to use hot water. Otherwise, it damages the leaves. But it has some really interesting, what they claim anyways, is it's full of antioxidants, minerals, and it helps with heart and cancer. But it has like the polyphenols again. It can boost your energy. And it has saponins, which is supposed to help you with, you know, heart health. Okay, that kind of thing. But what's interesting about it is it's places like Uruguay, Paraguay, and I think Argentina, if I'm not mistaken, and they drink like 3 times or 4 times the amount of this stuff as they would tea and coffee.
Check this out. Yerba mate is most popular in Paraguay and Uruguay, which you just said. People are seen walking the streets carrying it in a vacuum flask. In Argentina, 5 kilograms or 11 pounds of yerba mate is consumed annually per capita. Okay? In Uruguay, the largest consumer or consumption is 10 kilograms, 22 pounds per year. The amount of the herb used to prepare the infusion is much greater than that used for tea and other beverages, accounting for the large amount of weight used. So in other words, it takes more of these leaves to actually produce a tasty beverage in comparison to coffee or tea.
And another thing is it gives you like 3 times the amount
of caffeine.
So... But the saponins makes me a bit nervous because saponins can be poisonous if you're not careful.
Right.
So the thing is, the way they drink it is rather strange. You said a flask, but they also drink it out of gourds and they use these straws, which have little filters on the end.
Yeah. And so then you don't get in the leaves and
so
the chunks
grounds are
up.
Actually right in the water itself. And you just take your, you know, drink out of that and you draw it up so you don't get all the grounds in your mouth.
Well, it's interesting, too, because when you start to drink higher-end coffee, specifically coffee that's prepared in a French press or in a mocha pot, of which I use both of those methods, I never knew this before because I was used to drinking just Tim Hortons out of a paper cup. But what you're supposed to do is leave the last mouthful of the coffee...
In the bottom?
In the bottom.
I didn't know that.
Because that contains the grinds and all the sediment.
Interesting.
So you'll notice that in my cup of coffee here, actually, I have a cup of coffee here. Dad, look, what's in the bottom of the cup of coffee?
Coffee.
Yes. But about one mouthful. You actually never get down to the bottom.
You never drink the little bit in case it has grounds.
It's got sediment and all kinds of junk in it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. On the other side, we're talking about some cereal, right? Let's get into the other half of breakfast. Toast, cereal, all that type of stuff.
Bagels.
Bagels. Love bagels. He's Jack. I'm Matt. Lock us in. We're back. This is the growing season right here on News Talk Saga 960 AM. Continuing the theme of the show here of let's do breakfast. Now, we talked about on the first segment of the show here, we talked about fluids, things that make you pee, coffee, tea, and our favorite, our brand new favorite, the fan favorite, yerba mate.
Oh, my favorite by far.
We're going to get involved in this on Drinks on Us. I want to know more about this. I have to be able to get it somewhere.
Yeah, we got to get some holly going on.
Well, we can do that, but let's...
No, that's yerba mate, Matt.
Yeah. But I'm not. I have holly in my backyard. I'm not bringing that sucker in and stewing it. My wife's going to be like, you're a complete nut bar. What are you doing?
If you want to get wired real quick, use your holly.
Or I could just have more than one cup of coffee.
Yes.
I'm wired enough. You hear how fast I talk.
Really quick.
Yeah, so I don't need any more help.
No, you don't.
I'm good, right?
No, you're good.
But remember in the 80s, those Micro Machine commercials, that guy that would talk super fast? There was a guy, I forget the guy's name, but he would actually made it into the Guinness Book of Records for speed talking. It was insane. Just absolutely insane. You're looking at me like you don't know what the hell's going on.
So does Kelly complain sometimes that you're kind of on the fast side?
No. Fast tongues are a wonderful thing. Anyway, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
Don't want to know.
Yeah, I love it. Get some
yerba mate.
Keep
it to yourself, Matthew.
Yes, or to my wife. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So cereal. I'm a big cereal fan. Dad, before we get into the history, you a cereal fan?
I don't. Well, actually, Bran Flakes.
Yeah.
With raisins. Actually, it's my favorite.
So Raisin Bran.
Sure.
Okay. I love cereal. I am a big fan. Listen, I would eat cereal for effectively every meal.
No.
I love it.
No.
I love cereal.
No.
Big fan of cereal.
No, if I get constipated, it's Raisin Bran.
Man, hold on a second.
Too much information.
Yeah, yeah. We have been talking now on this segment for 1 minute and 50 seconds,
and
we've already made allusions to significant sexual practices as
well as constipation.
This is...
I am trying to be good in the new year, and so far I haven't been good.
Trying to be good in the nude year. New year.
Nude year, yes. So, Matt, can we please get back to cereal?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Okay. So, my wife and I, actually, my wife introduced me to oatmeal.
I hate oatmeal.
Love it.
I hate it.
I love oatmeal. Listeners, listen.
If you take the oat and the meal out of it, I'm good to go.
Yes, that's called air.
It's called empty plate.
All right.
Empty bowl, actually.
All right. Listeners, look. Here's the thing. The absolute best bowl of oatmeal that you're going to eat. And you know what? I know this recipe so well, I don't even need to look. Check this out. 1/3 a cup of the large flake Quaker oats.
Yuck.
Okay. You're just going to do the running commentary the whole time here?
Oh, yuck. Okay. Anyways.
2/3 of a cup of water. Boil it. Okay? Boil it till it gets, till it's boiled. Boil it till it gets boiled. That's the silliest thing that I've ever said. And then dump your 1/3 cup of oats in. Okay.
So when do you dump the oatmeal out and get rid of it?
You don't. You're going to rent it. It's like coffee. It comes out a different way. Anyway, okay. Let me finish.
Don't want to know.
Okay. So burner's on. Water's boiling. 2/3 cup of water. 1/3 cup of oats. Toss the oats in. Turn the burner completely off. Make sure that the oats are all submerged in the water. Set a timer for 6 minutes. Six.
Why 6 minutes?
We've worked it out. I don't know why. Well, okay. In my case, what it is I don't like my oatmeal super mushy. I like the oats still having some body. The thing that ticks me right off is oats that have got just mushy paste. Yuck. Gross.
So you stick to the wall kind of thing.
Right. If you do the boil for 6 minutes, the oats come out and there still are fully functioning oats. Like they're still, it's like warmed up oats. Okay. 6 minutes, drain it, toss it in a bowl. 1 teaspoon, if you want to get crazy, 2 teaspoons or a tablespoon of organic peanut butter. Slice some bananas in. That is the greatest bowl of oatmeal you'll ever eat. No milk. Now, my wife does it. Okay. So my wife does, she gets the quick oats, red bag of Quaker. Okay. Tosses those oats in about, let's say 1/3 cup, pours milk in until the oats are absolutely submerged in it, microwaves it for 50 seconds. And hers comes out typical classic oatmeal, pasty, liquidy. Cannot do it. I can't do it. But we make our oats completely different. But we are oatmeal. My go-to, Starbucks, ground cup of coffee in the morning, okay, with a bowl of oatmeal, natural peanut butter, bananas, or blueberries.
Okay.
Yes.
Can we do some history, Matthew?
Well, yeah. I was just giving you my thing.
No, that was kind of a bit on the boring side.
No,
I hated it.
All right.
Don't make me oatmeal, Matthew. So where does oatmeal and grits, another one I do not like.
Hey, grits I cannot do. That is awful.
So where does it come from, Matthew?
Well, grits definitely from the States.
Well, it's the oldest form of cereal.
Grits.
Grits and oatmeal. And it was eaten in by the Western society, I think so, Matthew, as far as I know. And it was up to 1854. They considered, most people considered grains to be horse food or animal food.
Yeah, but they figured out somewhere along the way that these things had protein in it. In fact, they were marketing these things as a replacement to pork.
Slabs of pork on your plate in the morning. Yum, yum, guys.
Yeah, but hold on. No, slow down for a second. Don't make light of that because everybody likes bacon. That's pork.
It was way more than just bacon on your plate.
But there's back bacon. I hate back bacon.
I like back bacon.
I can't stand it. Cannot
the saltpeter isn't good for certain areas of your body, but anyway, keeps things not so very happy.
Yes, yeah, like a limp noodle.
Very much.
Don't they insert saltpeter in the military?
Well, they supposedly, or even in prisons, I understand.
To keep things from
becoming happy. Okay, anyways, this guy Shoemaker, or Shoemaker, he hand ground oatmeal for cereal. And that was... Basically, it was marketed to replace pork at breakfast.
I just said that.
I understand you said it. And then, of course, it was adopted by Quaker, and it was a symbol in, I believe, 1877. And that's how Quaker oats were born.
Yeah, and this is interesting because this is part of the reason why we wanted to get involved in this on the growing season on News Talk, Soccer 960 AM, is because all of this is basically horticultural, and let's get even one word up, agricultural based. You're talking about a grain that is being ground up and used for not only cereal, but you're getting involved in oats and bread and such. My wife has got blood sugar issues, and the oatmeal is the key to keeping her blood sugar stable, and not the carbohydrate end of it. It's the protein end of it. There's protein in these oats, and it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. Especially if you're hypoglycemic or diabetic, protein is your key, and there is a pile of protein in these oats.
Yes, that's true. And it's also, it keeps you very regular. Okay, that's another thing.
Just nice, fluffy excretions.
No, I don't want to know, Matthew. So back in 2012, they estimated that there was approximately 4,595 different types of cold cereals. Is that right, Matt?
I guess. That's a lot.
That's a lot of different kinds of cereals. And then even Cheerios, when it first came out, they didn't call it Cheerios. What do they call it, Matt? You have to look it up.
Yes.
Cheerios, Matthew.
That makes sense.
And then it was, of course, it was
actually, I prefer Cheerios to Cheerios, to tell you the truth.
Well, I don't know. But anyways, there's about $1 billion in sales on Cheerios every year.
Check this out, by the way. Per 100 grams of oats. Okay?
Okay.
How many grams of protein do you think? Mind-blowing, actually.
15 grams of protein.
16.9 grams of protein.
I was pretty darn close.
That's a lot of protein.
That's a lot of protein.
In these little oats. So no wonder they were marketing this thing as a replacement for pork.
I don't know if that was necessarily their intention initially, but now it definitely is now. People are looking for a very healthy way to go. Right?
Absolutely. And these oats, it's great for your heart. The low in cholesterol. It's great. It's absolutely great. You hear about any of these bodybuilders that are weighing their food down to the frickin' micron and that are always about putting the most clean fuel in their body, and every day begins with oatmeal for these guys that are super health conscious.
Okay, so people who are putting, say, milk or so forth on their cereal, what do you recommend, Matthew?
Well, the common thing now when it comes to all these milks is getting into the quote-unquote alternative milk, right? Whether it be the almond milk or the soy milk or the cashew milk. Or all this type of stuff.
Or the rice milk even.
There's rice milk?
Oh, yeah. They say it's amazing for cereal. So they said rice
milk. Rice milk? Milk made from rice?
Yeah. They use rice to make their rice milk, and they say it's fantastic in cereal. Okay. Certain things are good in, let me think here, salad dressings. I believe cashew milk was good for that. And soy, I think, was actually, they said it was sweeter than your almond milk. But your almond, they said, was a bit watery, but it had a lot of a good dose of calcium. So there's all different good benefits out of it.
I've never had almond milk ever.
No, I haven't either. But you realize that, Matt, that 92% of all almonds in the world are produced by what place in the world?
Well, I know that we talked on a previous show about how drought conditions were affecting one of California's main crops, and that was almonds.
You're right.
Okay, so I'll say, is it California?
100%, Matt.
Really?
Yeah, even with them cutting down a lot because of the problems with drought, they still produce probably most of the almonds that are produced in the world.
What about California? Why?
I have no idea. I just think that the climate's good because they're in the neighborhood of, 8 through 11-ish on the whole. There are spots there, of course, like maybe around Truckee and so forth, which are in the fives, which again, like similar to us.
So they have, there's like straight up almond orchards.
Everywhere. You wouldn't believe it. And they cut down a pile of them because of the water issues. You know, they went through drought for like 7 years.
I would love to know. We need to get somebody on. I want to get an almond orchard on. Seriously. I want to get somebody.
That could be arranged, actually. I think
that's fascinating to me.
My brother-in-law, Joe, I think he knows somebody out there. So maybe we'll get somebody on.
That's so alien to me. An almond orchard. What do these trees look like? What's it look like?
I have actually, you know what, Matthew? I really could not tell you.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know what the heck an almond tree looks like.
They're not a large tree.
No.
I just actually, I don't know.
Is it more of an ornamental looking thing?
It would probably be in the 15 to 20 foot range, which is anime help again.
Yeah.
7 meters in the range? Say 6 to 7 meters.
When I use that word, maybe some of our listeners don't know what I mean by the word ornamental. Dad?
It's a tree that generally does not grow that large. It would be something like an ash. It could be a ginkgo. It could be a flowering crabapple.
Yeah.
It could be, say, an ornamental pear.
Okay.
It could be a Schubert cherry.
There's the one. There's two. You've just mentioned two, and we'll get back to cereal and breakfast. But for our listeners, if you are looking for a tree for your property that is deciduous, which means it drops its leaves in the winter or drops its leaves in the fall, and is pretty user-friendly, no nonsense, doesn't get a lot of bugs, basically stays contained growth. The two that my dad, aka Yoda, just mentioned, ornamental pear,
Schubert cherry.
And Schubert cherry.
Fantastic.
Are your two absolute go-tos. Because again, especially in a smaller subdivision property, these suckers don't get big. They're not super buggy. The only problem is this, is our first house, we put an ornamental pear in the backyard. And it is glorious because they get the most wonderful white flowers.
And they smell very nice,
too. And they
too.
Smell
the fragrance
nice.
Is amazing.
What was the big problem, though?
I don't know, Matthew.
Bees.
Really? Why?
Like crazy.
I didn't know that.
When they flower, maybe it was the area. Maybe there just wasn't a lot of trees around. So, of course, when the bees saw this tree, they were going bonkers. Bees like nuts. Nuts level bees. Because it's a fruit tree.
It's what they do, Matthew.
I know. Completely. But my wife was freaked out. We had a young infant. We had an infant at home, right? My son, Logan, at the time was like not even one. And she's afraid because there are always bees in the backyard. What if the kid is allergic to bees? But outside of that, they produce a little black fruit.
Well,
it's not even a pear.
It's nothing you're going to eat.
No.
But I think a better choice would be to go to something like a Schubert cherry.
Oh, God.
They come out.
You cannot say more good about this tree.
They come out green and then they turn purple as the season moves along.
That's the coolest part because what happens is as the season goes along, the tree is duo color.
It's fantastic.
Like the leaves are half green, half purple.
Yes.
It's weird looking.
Even the fall color is not bad.
And normally, cherries can be a real pain in the ass. A real pain in the ass tree. Right, they get cankers. They get like they're tough to transplant. They're actually tough to plant. Like if you start getting into sand cherry, which is a shrub version of the or member of the family, those things can be kind of finicky. This Schubert cherry is not that way at all.
No, it's not.
It's not unreal.
It's an easy one to take care of.
Now the only problem is the fall color kind of sucks.
I don't mind the fall color.
It doesn't really do anything because the color's already out. It's like the color on a Crimson King maple. Who cares?
Well,
it's been that color all year. Right?
I don't mind the green with the purple or the yellow with the purple. I think it looks fine.
And they flower too.
Yeah, and they flower.
Yeah.
And they don't grow that large, like
nope.
You said.
So. Ornamental.
So anyways, back to breakfast, Matt.
Yeah. So when you hear us use that word, it just means smallish tree, controlled growth. Okay. It's not crazy like a maple and such. Well, then again, there are some maples. Here's the issue. Back to the cereal. When it comes to the milk, look. You're better to just be drinking, according to science, according to environmental impact, if you're not lactose intolerant, you're probably best to just be drinking the damn cow's milk.
I agree. And it's
lactose
healthy.
Intolerance changes things. But
so they said that whole milk, 2%, and then they said soy was the next milk that was probably the healthiest for you, and then that's the sweetened, and then the unsweetened one was the fourth one that was the healthiest ones for you to drink.
Yeah. But as far as environmental impact, the cow, now some would argue with the presence of
methane.
Methane, with it farting.
Farts
right?
a lot.
But
and drools a lot.
Right. But these things are generally free range. They're eating grass.
Sure.
They're eating controlled substances, whether it be oats or whatever they're eating, okay? And the milk coming out has had the least done to it in comparison to soy milk and almond milk and cashew milk. There's way more of an environmental impact on creating soy, cashew, and almond milk, right?
Well, yeah. And again, people can do this themselves at home instead of buying it. And I forget what it is. I think it's one cup per liter or something of almonds if you want to make your own almond milk. But here's the thing. A cow generally, I don't know what the actual, you would have to look up the numbers, Matthew, what your return is from what they are eating. I think it's 1.5 kilos per liter of milk or something. But in the end, a cow that is generally had a calf, and that's when they get the milk, it can last up to, you know, you can say the cow will produce milk for about 10 months. So they can do anywhere from 10 to 12,000 liters of milk. I had a science teacher, a guy named Mr. McKinney, and he had a cow that produced 14,000 liters in a 10-month period. So that cow produced a lot of milk.
Now, wait a minute. Why in a 10-month period?
Because they generally take 2 months off? They're actually, the cow is being, they're going to be impregnated, I guess okay. The word is. So every so often they have, you know, that's the only way milk is going to be, you know, to keep flowing. They have to be pregnant. And then, that's why they're supposed to be feeding the baby, the calf.
Okay, this is going to sound really stupid, but I didn't realize that.
Well, that's, yeah.
So on a dairy farm, they would have to offset impregnation, right?
Absolutely.
Because you would have, if you impregnate it simultaneously, all your females, you're going to have a time in the year
where there's not going to be any milk.
No
but
milk being
It never
produced.
Works out that way. From what I understand, it doesn't seem to work out that way. But the best cow, as far as for milk production, from what I understand, is something called a Holstein.
Huh.
And then, you do have beef cows out there that, of course, they also get milk from, but they don't get nearly as much milk.
And you're not a farmer.
No, but I worked on a lot of farms over the years.
How many calves can a cow produce in a single year?
Generally one or two if they might have...
All I'm trying to do here is just work out in my mind the schedule necessary to keep milk flowing on a dairy farm consistently. Because that's a lot of pregnant cows.
Yes, and I would have to go along and get them inseminated. So, yeah, it's a lot of work, Matthew.
Holy
I worked
crap.
On various farms in Charlet as well as Holstein. So it's a lot of work. But in the end, I think drinking your atypical cow's milk is probably the healthiest way to go. But if you have issues with...
Lactose. Yeah,
and so
or milk
forth.
Allergies or whatever. Of course, you have to go to the other ones.
I understand that.
You have to go to the other. Yeah. Yeah. Not that we're agricultural based, but those are things that fascinate me. I'd love to know more about the how do you set that schedule up?
Well, I had friends that were doing it and they had farms and they had Charlet and so forth. But Holsteins, like I told you, are the ones that are the best milk
producing the most milk produce. Wow.
So can we get off milk for a minute, Matthew?
Yeah, sorry, man. I'm sorry. Just
and move on
me.
To tea. Or no, sorry, not tea. On to toast.
Toast. Yeah, toast.
What do you know about toast, Matthew?
I know that this is one of the rare times that Latin is not necessarily associated
no,
with
you
the
need
plant.
It. Yep.
But this comes from the word, this is a Latin word.
Yes.
Yeah, toastiere or something?
Toastiere.
Yeah.
It means to scorch or to roast.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else, Matthew?
It comes from classical times. It was small pieces of bread toasted to enjoy with wine.
Yeah, soaked in wine, actually.
Yeah. So, and this was more of a lunch or a dinner type of a thing. It was never associated with breakfast at first, and then I guess they began to...
Over the years, it did become...
It moved its way that way, right? And again, back to why we're doing this on the growing season, well...
It's all grain.
It's all grain.
So even the wine is made...
Is from... It's
from
vitis,
grapes,
it's
which
grapes.
Is, you know, vitis.
Absolutely. How much outside of... Here's a question for you. Outside of meat, how much of our food is plant-based?
Oh, geez, that's a hard one.
Well... Outside of dairy, everything else,
I would
though,
say 50 or 60%.
Yeah.
I would say maybe 70 or 80%.
I was going to say higher than that, right? Because if you think about it, but even to produce dairy, you've got to have plant-based because these creatures are eating.
Just think of it, though. A cow eats grass, okay?
Yeah.
So it's out in the field, and, you know, I know they're left at feral. We're going to have to talk about that in the future.
Yeah.
So there's lots more nutrient, and they put things in the fields and so forth so that the cows can eat it, or they're given grain as well. So, you know, again, let's not go back to the cows.
Yeah.
So anyways, more information on this toast. What do they recommend for the best toast to, say, for you, and you know, for that you don't burn it, or it's the easiest to cook, or whatever you want to do? What do you think the best one is?
The best one what?
Okay, so what is going to give you the nicest browning? Which cooks
the fastest?
Talking
about what type of bread?
Sure. What kind of breads?
Ooh, geez. Whole grain?
Well, whole grain is fine, except it can take higher heat, so it's a good one to do. But they say, you know, the light buttery bread, you got to be careful with that. It browns nicely, but it can burn.
And that too, the white bread, the grain is so refined, they've basically almost taken most of the nutritional content out of
it. Well, the gluten is the big thing.
Yeah. So the less or the more whole grain, the more that the bread is in its original form, which was whole grain,
sure,
the more health benefits. And as we talked about, protein, right, too. You're actually going to get protein out of your granular bread.
Sure. And the best bread to actually toast, is they said, is the day-old stuff.
What?
The day-old stuff. It seems like the fresher breads don't seem to toast as well, so they said use day-old bread. And here's another thing. You can microwave toast and still get the browning effect in your microwave. You know how to do this?
No.
So what they said to do was you take... I know, Matthew. I understand. If you don't have a toaster or it's broken down... By the way, mine breaks down all the time.
You know what? Okay, hold up a second. Let's back this up for a second. Okay. In the last 5 years, how many toasters have you gone through?
Five.
Five?
Five.
What?
I have no idea,
what
Matthew.
Are you drying marijuana leaves in these things?
I have no idea, but they seem to continually... What does your mom use the term for...
A planned obsolescence?
Yes, thank you.
Or redundancy or something?
Planned obsolescence.
Okay.
What is that again, Matthew?
Planned obsolescence.
Okay.
In other words, basically they're
made to break down.
They're made to break.
Sure.
There was a story of somebody in the States somewhere. I think it was...
planned. That's what it is.
Yeah, planned obsolescence. Yeah. There was somebody in the States, let's say Midwest. I think it was somewhere in there. Anyway, doesn't matter. Woman had a light bulb on her front porch. Okay. And she had that light bulb. She had that light 80 on.
80 something years or
something. Or something like that. Yeah. Right. And finally it burned out. And let's say it was GE that was the company. So somebody takes that to GE and says, this bulb has been in the porch. Now, remember, it's not super cold outside. It's not winter. I'm sure that wreaks havoc on a filament this was a filament light bulb. It wasn't a fluorescent or anything. Okay. And GE said, oh, it was an error or a dud.
And why did it last so long?
Maybe the filament was larger, but on GE's perspective is that if we make the filaments last longer, we don't sell light bulbs.
Sure, and in the end, it's all about marketing.
Right, planned obsolescence, right?
Sure. But anyways, back to the microwave.
We have a minute and a half.
Okay, back to the microwave. They say that you can put it on a paper towel in the microwave approximately for 30 seconds, and you'll get kind of... You know, if it needs to be repeated, repeat it again for another 15
minutes. And this will brown it?
It will brown it, actually. I've not tried it. You know what, Matthew? I think I'm going to try it tomorrow morning and see what happens.
Okay.
You know, all these things that they say you can do or might do or will do. I want to try this, Matthew,
and
see what
happens.
You
should do that with a nice cup of Yerba Mate?
Yerba Mate. Just looking forward to that one, Matthew. Okay, Matt, let's talk bagels.
Quick.
Okay, a traditional bagel is basically dough, which is wheat flour, no germ or bran. Okay, so they said salt, water, yeast, and leavening.
And they boil this thing, don't they?
Yeah, for like, I think 1 minute or something on each side, and that's how you get your atypical bagel.
And then what, it dries?
No, it keeps it kind of chewy, so that a bagel is generally on the chewy side.
And then they cook it?
And then they give it a light roasting.
Or like bake or something.
Yeah, and then it gives you that nice, it makes a good sandwich, but it's also great in the breakfast. It's great for breakfast.
Have you ever had
bagels.
Have you ever had a New York bagel? Like
no, I've never had one.
It is like drinking Guinness in Ireland. It's unbelievable. They have bagel. They have bagel carts in New York.
Where is that? Where are they at? Like where
in Manhattan?
York? Really? Like,
I'm talking bagel carts. Like you know how they have street meat outside of the Rogers Center?
Yeah.
They have bagel carts, and there is nothing like a New York bagel. You will freak. If you like bagels here, this again, as I said, this is like drinking Guinness in Ireland. It's a completely different experience.
Well, they're also high in calories. Oh, yeah. So you got to keep that in mind.
You have to lay off the bagels. All right. Speaking of that, speaking of laying off the bagels, brother, my man, we got to get in here. Show's over. Follow along with us. Click on Show Bits at growingseasoncanada.com. If you would like to subscribe to the podcast, all the information on how to do that is on the website. Again, growingseasoncanada.com. Click on audio and or on podcast, and it's all there. As well as if you would like to have a question submitted into the Growing Season, it's pretty simple. GrowingSeasonCanada.com. Click on contact. Dad, you have a bit of a correction.
Sure.
Breaking news.
I know. Allison informed us. She runs a spice shop in Toronto.
Yep.
And she told us that it's not actually yerba mate. It's actually yerba mate. And
I thought it was yerba mate.
I thought it was too. And she said there's actually a restaurant or
it's a cafe or something.
Cafe yeah. that actually yeah. sells the product. So, you know, drink your holly. Have a good
yes.
one.
So, correction, yerba mate is actually yerba mate. That's on us, right?
Sorry on that one.
That's okay. Listeners, thank you for joining us on all this horticultural hilarity. And, Dad?
Enjoy your breakfast. Jack out.